Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The yen is rising. Day of rage turns out to be, well, kind of a day of yawn. Oil is down the first week in three, and a major earthquake, the fifth worst in history, hits Japan, creates tsunamis all around the world. And what is going to happen from here? All this and more on the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 203. Thanks so much for joining me. Andrew Horowitz here, and we have just so much to talk about today, and I thought what we'd do is really focus in on some of the things that are extremely newsworthy. Obviously, there's so much to cover here between what's happening in the domestic affairs, whether it's the Wisconsin situation, or whether it's AIG, or even if we're looking at on an international basis, we're seeing a lot of percolation and talk again about Europe and the debt issues there. And then also, obviously, what happened with China this week with a pretty startling, a look at their exports and imports was just very confusing. And then we saw their inflation really heat up again. So we're going to talk about that. And of course, what to make of this whole market environment where now we are starting to move in a very fast moving motion towards a downtrend here. And don't forget, in any downtrend or in any uptrend, you have blips, right? The blips up or the blips down. Don't let that confuse you. You know, the main thing that we want to do, when we talked to people like Corey Rosenblum last week, is look at the trend and look at where the points are, the if-thens. You know, we talk with people over time about what to do in these events, whether you hedge or whether you go short. You know, this market of the last 2 years has all been about liquidity. And going short is difficult. You know, look what happened with Green Mountain Coffee Roasters last week. Did you see that? I mean, you know, this has been a perennial I've been wrong on this stock. You know, obviously the price is the real tell of this situation, but they've had accounting problems and you had to wonder where they would go with the high price of coffee, and they had competition and it goes on and on and on. And lo and behold, after a few weeks of confusing rumors going on about what was happening with Starbucks actually goes and starts utilizing their coffee inside of the K-Cups and is going to distribute through Green Mountain. Now, that's all fine and good, but boy, did you see the stock? Green Mountain popped 40% on that news, and Starbucks was up like, I don't know, close to 10% that day. Even with margin squeeze and all that, it's all about right now the marketing distribution that everybody's looking for. And if you were short, obviously you got hurt. So that's a big issue right now is really what side do you stand on, or do you straddle right now? We're in the kind of the place where we want to straddle a bit. We want to have both longs and maybe some shorts that make sense for some hedging, maybe use some options at some times, and then to, you know, take that off when appropriate. You have to be very, very nimble right now. Very nimble. You can be diversified. That will help. Bonds will help right now too in this kind of environment, depending on what your level of trading is and what your level of risk that you want to have. But, you know, if you are in fact trading or in fact you are looking to invest with growth as your orientation, then you have to be very nimble and watch out, because If you look at the trend right now, we're clearly in a distribution phase of the market. It could last a day, a week, a month, but you have to just realize that that's what it is. And we all know that during a downtrend or a distribution phase of the market, that most stocks will get hurt, even the good ones. So you have to kind of just keep that in mind. Before we go on to a few things, I want to mention, you know, some of the things that we're going to talk about today and who we're going to talk with today. I thought it would be really good, because this whole idea of the yen moving up in value and maybe some opportunities, what will arise because of the whole Japanese situation. You know, we're not trying to profit off of misery, but let's be honest. You know, when we're investing, we want to look for opportunities. And whether it's a good news item like, hey, we're all happy the iPad 2 is here and the Apple's moving higher, or you know, the situation in Japan where, hey, they have to do a lot of rebuilding, what may be places to go, and what's going to be really problematic moving forward. So I thought we'd bring in Kevin Hoffman. He hasn't been here in a while on the podcast, and he is, I work with him on a daily basis, obviously. He works here at Horowitz & Company, and he does a lot of the pulls for research, behind-the-scenes work to kind of look at the details of the fundamentals, of the technicals, et cetera. So we're going to bring him in, and we'll talk with him. I wanted to also mention that, you know, I think I mentioned this last week, and I want to make sure you heard me, that I would really need a little bit of your help. Really, that's the best I could say. I need your help. The Jason Taylor Foundation is having a fundraiser. It ends at the end of March, I believe, or so. And basically what it's all about is to raise money to help out underprivileged kids and to keep kids safe and off the streets in Miami and all that. Great foundation. And I'm helping them out. A bunch of my friends, we're getting together and asking people that we know, hey, can you spare a couple of dollars? Can you spare $10, $20, $30, whatever it may be? A few people have sent in some nice money already, and I appreciate it if you could just take a moment. Take a moment. If you know, call it appreciation, give back to the show. If you could go, please, and donate. All you have to do is go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and on the page for the show notes on the right-hand side of the site, you'll see the Jason Taylor. Just click it, and you can contribute right there. Anybody that sends $100 or more, I will give them signed copies of my book, and you know, hopefully you'll enjoy that as a little bit of a thank you for what you're doing. But I really, anything you can give would mean a lot to me, a lot to me. So, you know, I'd really appreciate that. All right. So before we get into a discussion with Kevin, let's kind of talk about some of the things that have been on my mind that I think we really should spend some time on. AIG. I don't know what to make of this story. You know, AIG wants to buy back about the portfolio may not be worth $15 billion, but they want to pay $15 billion in order to buy back a portfolio of subprime debt that they actually gave, or they didn't give. It was taken from them in the Maiden Lane transaction with the Fed. So they want to buy it back now. Well, gosh, guys, no kidding. You get it taken off your hands, you're exempt from any risk, and then you want to buy it back for below a market value of what it's currently worth. Gotta love those guys. Gotta love the cojones on these people. And you probably have to love, at the end of the day, the fact that the Fed's going to do it. Just the way it is. They want to figure out a way, as best as possible, to make these firms solvent, solid, and profitable at any expense. And that any expense, by the way, is you and I, right? Isn't that who's going to pay for this in the end? Even though the Fed doesn't have a balance sheet which we can see in a transparent nature that will show us how much we're on the hook for, we are on the hook as taxpayers to the Fed's profitability or non-profitability. And by the way, unless I'm missing something, money isn't really just created out of nowhere, right? So all this money that went in and all these profits that they're making on it, well, somebody had to win and lose in this deal. So let's not do any more of this misdirection, and let's come a little bit clean, you know, to Bernanke. I think there's something that we really need to talk about here, like we did with the QE2. And that's been a topic. This whole QE2 has been a topic of late because the QE2 runs out in June. Last time the QE1 was rolling out, right before the end of it, the stock market started to roll over, and there was a concern that this was going to be the last of the quantitative easing. There wasn't going to be as much liquidity in the system, and stocks got hammered. Does that have anything to do with what's going on now? Well, oil has a lot to do with it. You know, even though we see all these pundits on TV saying, hey, you know what? $105, $110 oil really doesn't bother me. It's not going to make a dent in GDP. And people, are you kidding me? You need to go back to your models and take a look at what we call skewedness, or you look at the ratio and speed and trajectory versus just a price situation. You know, it's one thing to look at a price over time and say, okay, over time, this can be absorbed like anything else, right? You have a spill on the ground, and when you put down the paper towel, it may not, you know, in 1 second absorb it, but, you know, over time, you keep on dabbing, you know, it absorbs it over time. Just like inflation and price increases. When you have price increases and you have inflation, the fact of the matter is that it is something that will affect the daily lives of individuals, of you and I. So these guys that are talking about it not affecting things, and even Jeff Rosen a couple of weeks ago when we talked to him, were saying that, and I was like, what? What are you talking about? Look at how the average person who works very hard gets paid and has enough money to get by during the week if, in fact, they are going to have to utilize their car, they're going to have to cut back in discretionary spending. There is no magic to this. When we saw the Michigan sentiment come out on Friday, and it was off by about 6 points, markets didn't seem to care for more than a minute and a half or so. You know, markets, you know, love the good news, but really don't really care about much of the bad news right now until it really compounds. We saw a 67 print on the Michigan survey. We were expecting somewhere about 76, 75, something of that nature. That was a pretty bad number, and it's really related to the high cost of fuel and a lot of the uncertainty in the Mideast. Now, if you want to discount that also, fine. But for how long, fellas, can you keep discounting? Now, I am not suggesting that things are generally not okay in many areas. They are. I've talked about this 100 times. Balance sheets are better. Earnings are better. There's not as much hiring, et cetera. So, and the firing is making for better margins and, you know, so on and so on. All the things we've talked about over time, right? We talked about the rise of the machines. We talk about the margin cuts. We talk about the new normal, the 8% unemployment, all this good stuff that is actually helping out companies. But at the same time, you have to realize at the end of the day, while we have inventories growing right now, and we saw another print of that on Friday, and we see the inventory to sales ratio is actually looking pretty good. When they're low, they're better, that ratio. You have to say to yourself, wait a minute, if they keep on pumping things out and we see things like what we saw in China this week, where the exports fell off a cliff, where we see that inventory issues are affecting the optical sector to a point that Finisar dropped 38% in one day because they are saying in their conference call that the inventories are overwhelmed and, in fact, in a bad way. In other words, there's too much inventory. And they see that China orders are just not there. They've kind of disappeared. So when you take all this together and you add it up, you have to start questioning how much longer markets can go without stimulus. Or maybe I have to ask a different question. How much longer can politicians go without stimulus? Because these guys are spend happy. But now that we have more of a Republican bloc in the House, do we actually get some beneficial cutting of the reckless spending that we've seen over the last several years? Probably not. The numbers will be in the billions, and that's great, but we need in the hundreds of billions, right? I mean, ooh, there's a $5 billion cut. I mean, come on. That doesn't do anything for anybody. So the other thing I wanted to kind of bring up is three things. I want to talk about, before we bring Kevin in, I want to talk about, you know, this idea that oil and the Middle East. So there was this day of rage that was scheduled to be happening in Saudi Arabia on Friday. Now, on Thursday, markets took a real big beating, right? Just across the board, they just got whacked. Part of the reason was because there was concern about the day of rage that was happening in Saudi Arabia. Part of the reason was because we saw a pretty controversial or concerning jobs print on initial claims. A part of it was because we see that in Europe, we're having downgrades of Spain, and there's a further talk about, you know, that Greece won't be able to pay their bills unless the deal is changed. So all this is coming together, and Thursday, you know, we broke below some key support levels, and people just threw in the towel. They were just done, right? And then we saw a little bit of follow-through. We saw the VIX rise pretty hot. Oil came down about 2%. Here's what's interesting. You know, everything's been trading off the oil lately, right? You know, the ups and downs. But meanwhile, oil was off by about 2.5% on Thursday, and the market still got crushed by about 2%, 2.5% on the Russell. And then you see that oil is actually down on Friday because the fact is that two things. Number one, well, it's a concern about, you know, the Japanese situation and the amount of consumption that's going to go on. But also we see that China is going to clamp down because their CPI that came out was very hot and it's much further along than they want it to be. And finally, the day of rage turned out to be, frankly, a day of yawn. On Thursday, they came out that there was some protest going on in the eastern part of Saudi Arabia. And what happened? Immediately, rubber bullets were fired at the people, tear gas was fired, etc. And I think that put a different level of understanding of how far the Saudis would allow for demonstrations to go. And what that did was it created a lack of interest. I mean, listen, you know, it's one thing to have a demonstration after what you saw what happened in Egypt, Tunisia, in Yemen. Pretty much the government said, okay, you know what, you guys, you're yelling, you're screaming, you're throwing rocks. Okay, we're out of office, we're done. Then you look at Libya. Libya, there's a much different level of conflict going on because the government doesn't want to give up, right? Simple. So when you look at this situation and you say, okay, I'm in Saudi Arabia and I'm thinking about, some kind of a revolt or demonstration or protest, et cetera. I see that the last few over in Egypt and a few of these other countries went pretty well, right? We got our people out. Well, that's first of all. Second of all, we noticed that when we mentioned this a few weeks back, Saudi Arabia, the government kind of threw $36 billion at their people in a variety of different measures to kind of, you know, make them a little bit more peaceful and really just kind of calm them down. And then we see that in Libya, they're not only firing, but they got the Air Force against the rocks, David versus Goliath. And now we see that our government is not going to put up with this. You know, maybe we should put a second thought into what is actually going on here and how we want to handle the situation. So I think that there's another one scheduled for March 20th, and we'll see how that goes. But the continuation of what's happening in Egypt and Libya and all these areas right here are obviously going to be a major driver, both good and bad, in the markets for some time, especially when we have the earnings season lull. Now, in addition to that, I want to mention something. The President Obama said recently that they would possibly look to tap into the strategic reserves if, in fact, there was this, you know, continuation of this high gas price. It's my understanding, and from what I've read, that the strategic oil reserves that we have are meant to be used only if there is an emergency in terms of the amount of oil that is available. In other words, if we have some kind of an embargo like we did in the 70s, or we have some kind of a situation where there's no oil, you know, we just don't have any. Well, we can actually get there. Now, look at the oil inventories. Look at the gasoline inventories. Gasoline inventories are like at an 8 or 9 year high. So there's no problem with gasoline, President Obama. This is not. Oil inventories seem pretty good. They seem all right. They're being drawn down, of course, but you know what? We're okay right now. So why? What is this rhetoric about, we're going to release this strategic oil because at least could we go down a path that's real? Can we say whether we're doing our best to try to figure out what to do in Libya and to get this straightened out? And it's going to be, to pour out information that is really not going to be used and not allowed to be used because it's, frankly, somewhat incorrect from my understanding. I think we really need to kind of wonder about what the politicians are telling us these days, not only President Obama, but both sides of the aisle. You know, they talk to appease, they talk to get elected. It's just very frustrating. So I'm not going to go on that whole rant because we'll do that maybe on DH Unplugged or something like that because it's just very, very frustrating. The last thing I want to mention before we talk with Kevin about what's going on with the yen, why is this playing out, you know, and what opportunities and things are there out there is this whole idea that, basically that we're seeing a major problem start to erupt again in Europe. Now, the euro has been very, very strong of late, very strong. Dropped off, early in the week with a safety trade, but kind of came back really strong as Germany said, sure, they're going to continue with their support, and they're even going to maybe possibly support a lower interest rate for Greece and doing something for Spain, et cetera, even though Spain was downgraded this week, as was Greece. So, I think we need to kind of keep an eye on that situation. Germany's numbers in terms of production, all that really kind of fell down a little bit. There is still concern about England. England obviously cowered it out and didn't actually raise interest rates in the line of, even though there was inflation that was showing up because they don't want to hurt the economy. There's so much concern also over the markets, the stock markets. These politicians have so much concern over the stock markets that they can't make a proper decision to save their lives. They're too involved. They're way too involved. But let's not get back onto that rant. Let's kind of close that down. If you have any questions, you can always write me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I got a few good emails that came in recently that I will have for an upcoming show. And I want to mention also, of course, if you haven't picked up my book, The Winning Investor's Guide to Making Money in Any Markets, available over at Amazon, and the Jason Taylor Reading Room, please go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, click on the little button to donate, and just give some, just a little bit, just a little gift, something. Make me really happy for my birthday, which is coming up this month, March 20th. And, not that I'm begging for gifts and all that, but you know what? A good cause is a good cause. And Jason Taylor's a great guy. He used to be on the Dolphins and on the Jets. Now, seems that he used to be on the Jets, too. He was let go a few weeks ago. And, just a really good organization. I recently went to a couple of meetings, and we spent some time really looking at what they do. Just a great, great, down-home, nice, charity that helps out, and you can see a real difference in the community. So the Jason Taylor Foundation, the Reading Room Foundation, is something that we're doing. And please give a little couple of bucks to that. All right, so thanks for the donations. Well, just let's move on to this discussion that we talked about that we're going to have with Kevin. Kevin, how are you, buddy? It's been a while since you've been on. And by the way, you get rave reviews every time you've been on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's happened, but I've been around here hanging out, doing my thing.
I figured that if you're getting all these rave reviews, I'm not going to bring you on as much because they want to hear you more than they want to hear me.
That's right.
So I don't know who wants me droning in their ears all the time anyway. But all right, listen, I got a couple of things that you and I have been talking about. And we were kind of surprised today when we saw that, the aftershocks of the whole earthquake was that the yen was spiking, right? So you and I are like, what? Wait a minute, let's kind of think through this for a second. And we're like, why is the yen going higher? Why is the dollar coming down? And what did we kind of like finally, after a few minutes, figure out?
Well, actually, as soon as the earthquake hit, actually, the yen weakened quite a bit, which is a typical kind of thing to happen when you have a disaster like this. But in the end, the yen began to strengthen quite a bit. And much of the reason for this, there's actually a couple different scenarios here. The first one is you have a lot of insurance companies and reinsurance companies that are based in dollars or based in euros. And they're going to have to actually go out and buy a ton of yen in order to pay out for these damages and to pay claims to different people. So one of the other things is a lot of investment companies in Japan who have investments in different commodities, foreign equities such as U.S. equities, they're actually beginning to sell some of these positions in order to create liquidity in order to help out the people of Japan.
So here's the problem. So what's happening is, it's twofold, I think, right? So what you're saying to me is that, first of all, what's happening is that there's a requirement to pay out claims and, you know, from the damages, et cetera,
right,
from these reinsurance or insurance companies to the policyholders in yen. And a lot of that's held in dollars or other currencies.
Right.
And they have to convert it because they're going to have to pay it out, because you can't, your insurance company here isn't going to pay you, 100,000 yen to fix your fence. I mean, you're not, so it's got to be in your own currency.
Right.
The second thing is, you're saying that a lot of the things that they have on the books, maybe that they're holding and they invested in, they have to get rid of because they need to raise enough money to actually pay out the claims.
Right. Well, then also investors inside of Japan, such as, banks in Japan, they need to create some liquidity. They don't have enough cash to, to either pay out claims or to satisfy people that are making withdrawals. They need to liquidate those positions that they hold in foreign equities. If they hold U.S. equities or if they hold commodities, which is kind of the reason why we saw a lot of the commodities drop today. Oil, maybe not so much. That could have had to do with the day of disaster or whatever was supposed to happen. But we did see commodities such as corn go limit down today, and some of the other soft goods go limit down, because a lot of the companies in Japan are releasing some of their more, I guess I should say, illiquid assets and creating liquidity of yen.
I think, though, I just want to take it a task on that and ask a question. Didn't some of the... It's interesting because, what you would think which should be weakness actually during the day picked up. I mean, I'm not sure why the U.S. stock market, except for the fact that the dollar was just flying, down to the, or should say sinking, against every major currency. The dollar was just getting crushed. And at the same time, while we saw the limits down there, gold started picking up, copper started picking up and all that. And that's on the heels of a CPI number from China that came out last night or 2 nights ago, whenever it was, Thursday or Wednesday came out. I think it was Thursday night. And what that was showing, that it was very hot and that they were going to try their best to tame it. And that meant not stockpiling, et cetera. Now, then commodity prices turned around. Do you think a lot of the reason for that was due to the fact that Japan will have to replenish?
Yeah, I think there's two things here on that. Japan, first of all, really only imports about $23 billion from the U.S. versus their exporting of about $84 billion to the U.S. So I think what we're coming to here is that the U.S. is going to be one of the major benefactors of any kind of Japanese recovery, being that they have one of the strongest dollars, or I guess the strongest yen against the dollar. So it makes purchasing goods from the U.S. much cheaper than any other area in the world.
Right.
So, you know, if they can purchase goods cheaper from the U.S., that's just going to make it easier for them to do. And they will do so accordingly.
Yeah, we're going to get into a couple of things that you discovered that may be beneficiaries of this. And, you know, again, we talk about in the beginning of the show, I mentioned that we don't want to, you know, be profiting on anybody's misery. But, you know, at the same time, we're talking investments, right? So there's going to be winners and losers, and we have to look at that. It's kind of interesting. Kevin and I, we're also talking today a little bit about, wouldn't this be fascinating that if in the history books someday in the future, that all of a sudden we can turn around and say that the reason for Japan's recovery over time, the final release from the bonds of deflationary environment and the stagnation of their economy over time was all due to this major earthquake and severe aftershocks. I mean, there's been a continuation of in the news all these aftershocks too, which on their own are earthquakes.
Right.
You know, so I mean, a 7.0 on the Richter scale aftershock is an earthquake, for goodness sakes. This was big, and I think we're going to see a lot of repercussions around the world due to this. But, you know, it is kind of interesting how the world markets got smoked last night or the night before when it actually happened, and then, you know, in the nighttime, I should say, and then...
You're talking about Thursday.
Thursday. But right. but the bottom line is that, you know, the U.S. market didn't seem to care too much about it, even though the U.S. market had a really bad consumer confidence number come out.
Yeah, that's true. I think, you know, one of the things that you're coming off the heels on the stock market from on Friday, you were talking about how, you know, why is it coming up so much? And I think one of the reasons is because the U.S. is going to be a pretty big benefactor of a Japan recovery. You know, you're having steel stocks and you're having all the different materials companies, yeah. Agriculture companies. You can see through some of the pictures all the cars that are being washed away, you know, that they're going to have to replace quite a bit of steel over there.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big export of those. We're going to get into that, and I want to talk to you about that. So I'm not totally convinced that the U.S. stock market is operating on anything more than liquidity. You know, dollar down, market up. Dollar down. You know, there's something there that makes it much more beneficial. You know, if you think about it for a second, you know, deflating the dollar is an inflationary mechanism. Inflation generally moves stocks higher. That's just a general point. You know, we look at Zimbabwe and everybody, oh my God, you see the stock market in Zimbabwe? It's unbelievable. Yeah, but wait, that 2,000% up is on the heels of 4,000% inflation. So you really didn't make any money with that situation. So I think that's one thing. I think the second thing is that, yeah, people may look for an alternative right now because, you know, we did see that when this happened, obviously, the Asian markets got hammered and there's some concern about what will be the long-term effects. Right now, we still don't know. We're probably not going to know for weeks what the real effects of all this are. But I think the basic issue is that, you know, oil was that day was down 2.5% after down 2% the day before. And then all of a sudden started rising throughout the day. I think there still was a big overhang on the day of rage, which I keep calling the day of yawn. Nothing happened in Saudi Arabia. And we discussed that earlier on this podcast of why on the show. But at the same time, you know, let's kind of look at the reality that the situation, even though we like to forget about these things because, you know, who wants to think about the bad, right? But in the Middle East, there still is a lot of unrest that will continue. But you know, oil is going to be kind of bouncing around all over the place, and it's going to affect our markets, and it's going to affect you know, our economy. But let's look at this in depth now, Kevin. So let's talk about some of the sectors that could benefit, and some kind of, you know, thoughts on who could be seeing some problems, and kind of give the listeners an idea of maybe, you know, what to be honing in on. Because people are always asking, you know, well, what should I be looking for? What should I be looking at? What should I be thinking about? So kind of take me through the process of what you were thinking about when we talked about, okay, you know, where are the winners and losers and what should we do about it?
Right. So in the short run, you're probably going to see a lot of the commodity companies, whether it be soft goods or whatnot, come down a little bit. And that's just maybe on the pricing. But I think long run, there's some good opportunities there for a rebuild in Japan. And those companies include companies that may be providing wood or cement or steel as such. So some of those companies that you can take a look at on the steel, especially if you're talking about a rebuild of cars, is AK Steel, US Steel, and Cliffs, which is out of Australia, if I believe. Is that right?
They actually have a lot of, I think, Cleveland Cliffs. Well, the old name is Cleveland Cliffs. It's called Cliffs. And they're
Cleveland based, but
they have big mining operations and all that. Coal, it's coking coal and all that, and
right.
A lot of their coal, them and Walter Energy, is used for the couple things, which you have the thermal coal, and then you have also the coking coal and the sink, and basically for the making of steel. You know, you got to heat up steel. How do you make it hot?
Exactly.
You know, so.
And I think that's one of the major points here that we're going to come into is, especially since you have this nuclear power plant down in Japan.
Yeah.
They're going to have some kind of alternative energy, whether it be with the coking coal or with the coal and oil. So eventually you're going to have some increased output. So as we saw oil come down today, you know, that may have been more Middle East relief, I should say. Not sure if there's much relief there, but, you know,
right.
in
for markets.
Yeah, for markets. But I think in the long run, depending on how much damage and disaster that we have over in Japan, oil is going to play a big part in the recovery, especially with if the nuclear power plants are down or any of their other power plants are down.
Yeah, I mean, the big question is going to be this, to what level is the power plant down, right? Are we talking about it's offline or is there a leak? There's two different unique issues, and that's going to obviously spark up the debate here again. And we haven't built a nuclear power plant here since the 70s.
Mm.
You know, I mean, we're the least. I mean, and, you know, we're a little bit more exempt from earthquakes than Japan is. But, you know, and obviously the rebuild of some of the buildings, you would think that they're going to use reinforced and some other special materials because of this circumstance. And but when you look at some of these, you know, you look like let's just look at the steel companies, the U.S.-based, and some of the benefit you said would be that maybe because it's cheaper for them to buy some of this. And again, there's also from Brazil, Gerdau, and a few other places around the world, there's steel companies.
Right.
And you can buy those, obviously. But here and Japan has their own steel companies, Nippon Steel, et cetera. So the thing is that there's obviously a few things that go into it. It's the cost of traveling. So then you got the shippers, obviously. You know, you got the various rye shippers and the bulk shippers that are out there that potentially could benefit.
We know that shipping rates have been coming down.
Yeah, rates have been coming down
for quite some time. So I'm not sure if the prices of shipping really even come into play.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. But here's my question: if you look at the charts on like an AK, and I'm going to pull it up, but an AK and a U.S. Steel, they look awful.
Yeah, they haven't been looking great lately. But you know, we saw that huge jump last week after the earthquake. For a little bit of a boost on both on most of the major steel providers in the U.S., whether it be AK, X, Steel Dynamics, a bunch of the different companies.
But they've been all down. I mean, AK Steel came back like 6% on Friday. They're probably one of the most used for automobiles, and that's what they looked at. And then, of course, we had good automobile sales, though, recently. So I don't know why that blew out so much, but there was, I guess, an overproduction.
Yep.
And pricing got a little carried away. And then you got X, that, you know, U.S. Steel, that again, the chart looks miserable. If it wasn't for this earthquake today, this week, I should say, last week, you know, you would have seen kind of a continuation of the downtrend there. But when it comes to the, you know, the steel plays, you know, the other thing is that a lot of the Japanese cars are actually built here in the United States and around the world.
Right.
So they're going to be offline potentially in some areas over there. Maybe.
Right.
But more so, I mean, you know, What is the outlook in terms of, don't forget, in New Zealand, they just reduced rates down, and because they're rebuilding after the whole earthquake there.
Right.
So, you know, Japan's going to maintain a low, a very loose monetary policy during this. And again, it depends on how much damage we see, you know, moving forward. But, you know, do we really see this as a long-term situation or more of like a trade, or what are you seeing there?
I mean, it could potentially be long-term depending on the damage. I mean, you're talking about an earthquake that's, what did you say, top five, I think we talked about earlier?
Yes. I think it was the top, I don't know what was worse, but this is pretty bad. This is like a Vesuvius kind of thing.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
that was a volcano, but that was, you know.
You're talking about a rebuild process of, you know, quite a long time. I mean, I think we saw that that earthquake in Haiti, and that took, I can't even remember, but I think it was at least 3 to 5 months.
It's nothing done yet.
Nothing done yet.
No, it still looks the same, but we forgot about it. Seriously.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. Japan's going to need to rebuild, and they're going to want to rebuild. So I think this is going to be a long-term trade. It's going to be a long-term process. I mean, you're talking about a lot of cars that they need to rebuild. People are going to be needing to buy. You're talking about buildings that need to be redone, roads, all the whole sort. I mean,
how about this conspiracy theory? You know, I'm going to get John Perkins on in a few weeks to talk about oil and the whole Middle East. And, you know, was there something behind that? I mean, you know, there's going to be those people out there, and I don't want to go so far as say kooks, but there's going to be those people out there that say that, you know, this was...
Oh, it's planned.
Oh, yeah.
it's the weapon, right?
This is the ultimate in Keynesian thinking and prosper way to make an economy prosper is if you break it down,
right?
You ruin it and then you have to build it back up,
right? Makes it an emerging nation,
right? Exactly, is it developing and emerging and all right. That, right? The rebuilding, right. The infrastructure build and all that. I don't know. Sounds kind of crazy.
Yeah, Japan has had a tough time. I mean, they're, with the yen being as strong as it is, exports have diminished, and I mean, they need to become more self-sufficient, and that's been difficult, I think, on their economy.
Yeah, I mean, and now that the yen is surging, you have to wonder if that's going to play a role in the markets. You know, getting into their markets right now is going to be difficult because if you have a market that maybe. You know, you can't short it really because if you're dealing with an ETF, you have to deal with the currency issues right now. Right. And then on top of that, you know, you have a surging yen right now. Dennis Gartman came out with something last week and says he's out of his yen short. And you look at also like a Barry Ritholtz, he said he's long Japanese stocks. He thinks that's the number one place to be this year. You look at Dr. Doom, or maybe it's Mr. Doom, or Professor Doom, over at the Gloom Doom Boom report. What's his name? Mark Faber. Mark Farber. He said also his pick recently, last week, I think he said that his pick was Japanese stocks.
Right.
Now, nobody looked for an earthquake in there, obviously, to derail the whole situation. But I don't know. I kind of, you know, I think there's some interest in the cement, and I think that would be a short-term trade and all that. I think there is an opportunity there. I don't know how much the government, how much this weakens the government and how much this causes a economic slump in the country due to... what's going on. I mean, you know, we're looking at it from like kind of the glass is half full, not half empty on this discussion.
Right.
You know, there is some economic impact on all this, and not only for Japan, there's also, isn't there some economic impact potential for the rest of the world that's negative?
I don't know. That's...
There's got to be something. I mean, you know, you don't just have an earthquake and everything's happy.
Right.
You know, and then all of a sudden, oh, that's great. We can just rebuild. The money's got to come from somewhere.
Well, exactly. And I think we talked about that briefly, about them pulling all their money out of their investments around the world. I mean, and Japan is a, you know, typically more, I don't know if this is true or not, but maybe more of a service-oriented financing, investments.
Yeah, I mean, they have that. They're clearly an aging population that has a lot more insurance. There was a big concern about Aflac when this information came out. And then immediately they were discounting it, saying, hey, they don't do any kind of property and casualty. But you know what? Aflac does have accidental death and dismemberment. They have cancer policies. They have death insurance, you know, life insurance right. And all that. They have health insurance over there in Japan. So, you know, that is an issue.
And most of their business comes from Japan.
Yeah, about 75 or 80% of the people. People don't know that, I don't think, that Aflac has it. But that's not from the thing that you would have here necessarily. It's they buy specific policies for specific cancer, specific diseases,
right.
Accidental death. They're really big into that over there.
Yep, right,
and that's what Aflac does. Well, who are the losers here? I mean, we talk about that they have to sell this stuff, right? So commodities may be vacillating and have some problems. But, you know, at the same time, you're selling down the dollar,
right.
Commodities rise. So it's an equilibrium,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You use commodities to rebuild.
Right.
So they go up. But there's got to be somebody, every equation, right? A winner, loser.
Yeah, I mean, the real losers here and the real obvious losers are the insurance companies. You know, insurance, reinsurance, you're talking about Aflac. As far as reinsurance goes, we have to take a look
Swiss,
at some of those.
Swiss Re.
Yeah.
You got the multitude of companies that are involved in the insurance business, property and casualty, are in Germany, actually.
Right.
And there's a host of them in there. And, you know, you have to look at, you know, that market. We have some here, too. You're going to look at a variety of names. You're going to look at a Prudential, maybe. You're going to look at potentially a Met. You know, it depends on where they have the coverage, et cetera. But it's going to hit most insurance companies, right, I would think. Even if they have a smaller.
I mean, I don't even know if Lloyd's of London and stuff like that.
Yeah, they have access. They
that's
have
probably going to be, yeah.
They got to have exposure.
Right.
And then we'll see also how, you know, investors, don't forget, you know, investors have limited choices now, right? So they don't want to be in the Middle East for the most part. They can't invest in Egypt because the markets are still closed, you know, only for a month and a half. You don't want to invest in that whole region. You're really concerned. Maybe oil, you push up, and
you're concerned with the emerging markets. Period.
Right.
Just on the basis of any kind of contagion risk of any outbreaks. I mean, anything from the Middle East can start, and Europe is protesting. I mean, we're having protests in Wisconsin, for goodness' sake.
Oh, I know. So. Terrible. Your alma mater, right?
That's right, yeah.
So, are you going to go protest? Are you going
to? I don't think so.
You don't think so?
That's my old stomping ground, though.
Yeah, so make sure they don't mess it up, break their necks. So, the other thing is that, you know, obviously, I was thinking about also what Japan does. I mean, they're big into the chips and technology. And, you know, does that benefit or not? I mean, you know, we have a lot of plants. Intel does a lot of business out of Japan. You know, you have all the various companies that are doing business out of there also
I think there was a few of the chip companies and I guess some of the storage companies like SanDisk that were concerned that some of the plants and whatnot had been destroyed or damaged that could cause some supply disruptions.
Right. Which then hikes their pricing.
Right, their pricing, and it's already expensive.
Right,
it's already expensive for us to buy products from Japan just based on the dollar yen trade, and I think you're really on the whole currency thing. I know we keep bringing this up, but I think there's almost a floor here on the Japanese yen. I mean, the Bank of Japan is just going to have to step in.
Yeah,
at some point. I mean, I think the floor is at 80. I hate to say it, but that would be my best guess.
I mean, they have to step in, but at the same time, how do they step in there? And how do they then fund all of this? You know what I mean?
It's a difficult process.
Well, you know what's fascinating? It's like, you know, every single situation that goes wrong in a country, the government is there to bail them out. I get that. Totally get that. Is there ever a repayment? Or do we just keep on, I hate to say kicking the can down the road because that's so cliche, but is there ever a time that we have to pay the piper for all of this wonderful whining and dining that the governments do?
Well, I guess the only time you're going to have to do that is if the country who owns your debt gets in trouble.
Well, Japan is the second owner of U.S. debt, you know.
Right.
I mean, and they recently flipped back and forth with China.
Right.
So, you know, back to that for a second. Will they have to do something? See, the problem is if they sell the debt over there, then they're pushing down the dollar again,
right?
Because they'll return it back to yen.
Yeah.
So that's not in their best interest.
Right.
It's a chess game.
It is.
It's a chess game with no answer is the problem, because you can come up with so many different if-thens on this circumstance and try to figure out where things are going. And at the end of the day, the knowledge, or at least the implied knowledge that investors have, that governments will take care of everything. I mean, we're having this discussion on the heels of the assumption that governments are just going to step in and take care of everything.
Right.
That's a pretty sick discussion to have.
I mean, that's monetary policy, I guess, right?
It's monetary policy. It's democracy. It's capitalism capitalizing on socialism.
Exactly.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's very similar to the AIG situation. I'm not sure. You know, if you discussed that earlier or not.
Talked about it briefly. Go ahead, bring it up. Oh.
But yeah, I mean, you're talking about the government bailed out AIG. They took a huge amount of risk there. They took a
you
very...
think $300 billion was a big risk?
No, that's just tiny, right? Especially when we're talking about a deficit.
It wasn't a trillion, for God's sake.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. It was a trillion.
Numbers are so... They roll off the tongue so easily these days. You know?
Commas and zeros.
But you're talking about AIG government, or U.S. government, taking on a large amount of risk. And now AIG is saying, "Oh, you know, now we'll buy it back. You know, no big deal. Risk is off, basically, or at least it seems it's off for now."
Well, they revalued the portfolio. Blackstone revalued the portfolio.
Right,
it was a $15 billion deal. There's going to be a profit on the deal. They'll keep a little bit of profit. They'll get it back, and then they'll up the valuation again. And then AIG will spit it out and sell it.
Exactly.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing. And the Fed, in their infinite wisdom, is going to allow this crap.
Exactly.
It's so stupid. It really is. And then at the end of the day, it's the taxpayer who loses.
Right. Well, I mean, the taxpayer took on the risk. At least the government's coming out with a profit.
You know,
that's everybody's thinking, thank goodness we came out with a profit on that one.
Who was it that said that when they come back in life, they want to be the bond market? Who was that? It was an investor, a very famous investor, who said, when I come back in life, I want to be the bond market.
Hmm.
You know, you can't lose. You know, the bond market always wins. You know what? When I come back, I want to be AIG.
That's a great idea.
Right? AIG. Forget the bond market. I mean, the bond market can go up and down. AIG could basically be bankrupt and brought back to life with incredible speed and no obligations for doing so.
Right. That's almost as, I don't know. I think GM might have been faster.
Oh, GM's even better. Because now they're giving out bonuses to everybody.
Then. That's right.
You got to respect that Mullally over at Ford at least got a $52 million bonus. But you know what? Good for him.
That's right.
Good for him. He had the balls, actually, and the backbone not to cave in to all of this and to say, you know, we're going to do it on our own. Now, I don't know what kind of backdoor deals were done or anything like that, but I'm assuming it wasn't.
Right.
GM said, you know what? We're going to start over. We're going to put the reset button, and we're going to come out and do our deal. Whether IPO is, you know, it's underwater, went down 30% since the high of the IPO, after the IPO.
Right.
Because everybody knows what a piece of junk it is, and that's going to be a massive unloading by all the players.
Yep, exactly.
Well, anyway, and Kevin, thanks for joining us. By the way, just to let you know, folks, if you want and you like the ideas we talk about here and maybe some of the things that you say, hey, you know, that makes sense. Or maybe if they don't make sense, I don't know. We do manage money here. And, of course, you can simply find out more about that by going to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. There's a little box that says, like, hey, check out this little tutorial. Go check it out. It's like 10 or 15 minutes, 12 minutes, I think it is actually, where it tells you a little bit about what we do, how we do it. And if you're interested, $50,000 minimum is all it takes. We have a transparent process where you see everything about what's going on in your portfolio because you have access to your portfolio and it's segregated from everybody else's. So there's no commingling here. And then we have a private website that's available where you can simply log on and check out what we're talking about every single day. We put some information about what we're thinking, why we're doing, where we're going, what's happening with this stock that we have. Why do we do that? Are we thinning out the portfolio? Are we bulking up the portfolio? Why do we, you know, second step into this stock? Or why are we just laying back and check out these economics? So that's kind of some of the things that we do, and I think it's quite different. So check that out if you're interested. If it's kind of like you've been thinking, oh, I don't know if I should invest or not. Well, we go both ways, so to speak. We can go long, we can go short, and the bottom line is that hopefully looking for opportunity either side. So anyway, Kevin, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, great. I thought what we'd also do is just take a moment to explore some of the ideas that may be some interesting investable ideas that we've kind of been going over. We talked about a few of them, and I want to talk about the other side too. You know, so we continue to find out that there is more and more damage to the nuclear reactors in the two of them in particular in Japan. And one of them is possibly involved in a meltdown of the nuclear rods, and the other one is still questionable. There's some radiation released. So what are we looking at here? Now, remember something, that in Japan, these facilities were built, I think, 23 or 24 years ago, and they were built on that technology of the day. Remember also, we haven't built anything, as we said, in 3 decades or so in the United States. Same basic structure and technology used in that. The newer ones have a much different containment level from what I've been looking at, and they have a much different level of protection. And in Japan, they had to actually go in and put seawater in order to try and attempt to cool down what was this overheating situation, and it continues to be a problem. And I'll tell you something else, we're not going to hear the extent of this for some time, right? You know, because they got to play it down. They don't want to spook everybody. At the same time, Japan's going to come in with a massive stimulus package that they already have put together. The number one thing they're doing is already it's a financial situation almost before they even deal with a rescue attempt. It seems like there is more concern about money leaving Japan and the problems they're going to have there. And because of the massive move of the yen on the end of last week after this information due to repatriation of assets, I would venture to say that we'll probably see another pop to the yen, and then it's going to move down sharply due to this massive stimulus and injection by the Japanese government. But here's a couple of ideas. First of all, it would seem that this is going to probably push back the nuclear ambitions, or at least the ideas, particularly in the United States and around the world. And a lot of places may be second thinking whether they want to actually get involved in using nuclear energy at all, even though it has all these benefits, because it will be a real problem for the public to really focus in on the benefits over the potential dangers. So with that, you know, you have to look at what would be hurt. I would take a look at uranium. There's a chunk of uranium stocks out there that you may want to look at. All you have to do is, you know, type in uranium stocks anywhere in Google, or you'll find a bunch of them. And I would question what's going to happen to these stocks, because uranium has been really moving up very well of late because there has been continued discussion over efficient energy, right? And the use and getting off of fossil fuels. And you have wind, you have solar. and you have uranium, nuclear, and you know, you also have hydropower, things of that nature. But basically, the nuclear power has been something in the spotlight. And now, with what's happened, I would think that whether it's going to be true in the future or not, investors are going to be backing off their uranium plays. So take a look at some of the uranium stocks that may be ripe for a short. We're going to actually, on DH Unplugged, I'll bring a couple that may be interesting to take a look at this week. We record on Tuesday nights. Don't forget, you hear it late Tuesday night, Wednesday, you'll get it on iTunes on DH Unplugged. So take a look at that. The second thing that you may want to think about is companies like GE. GE was responsible for some of the building of that and what's going to happen there. And they were also involved very heavily in the nuclear area. Steel stocks we talked about, and I think that's of interest as well, that may benefit concrete. In particular, some of the concrete companies around the world that do fulfill to Japan are probably going to see a boost here. Lots of names in there. I'm not going to really give you anyone specific because there's a lot of research that you could do to find out which ones would be beneficial to utilize. But it would seem that if there's going to be a rebuilding process of the entire economy, then in those regions, which account for about 8 to 10% of total GDP for Japan, that you may want to look at that. The other thing you need to start looking at is the chip companies, because a lot of the chip companies were now offline due to some of the damage. Car companies out of Asia as well are going to be taken offline. So what's going to happen there? A company like a Borg Warner, which has a tremendous amount of export and utilization in Japan, may be something that's going to get hurt here also. So just consider that as something that you may want to look into. We'll see what the global reaction to all of this is. Natural gas spiked up last week because there was the thought that, you know, use of natural gas would be necessary to fuel some of the rebuild, et cetera, and just a lot of other nonsense that goes around. I mean, you know, these are fast-paced moving issues that you'll have to really pay attention to. I would venture to say that gold and silver may actually start moving up again if you see this dramatic move by Japan to once again pour in a ton of stimulus and the uncertainty of the environment with this, and who knows what's happening in the Middle East and what's going to go on there. So, you know, consider that and think about where there are opportunities for the long side and what may be either twofold, an opportunity to move out of a position that you've had for a while that could get hurt or that may be shortable. That's the thinking that I want you to have when you start the process of maybe screening and then looking at what is next potentially going to happen here. So that's something I think that you need to look at and consider. And then finally, I wanted to talk about, we have a lot of interesting economics coming up in the next week. We have a Fed meeting coming up next week, which I don't think there'll be any change, of course, to anything to speak of in these discussions. And we saw retail sales on the end of last week. That looked pretty good, generally speaking. The jobs numbers are starting to concern people again. And you have to wonder how much of this oil price over $100 is going to continue to cause a problem for the worldwide confidence. We saw consumer confidence drop about 6 points on Friday, and we'll see what happens over the next week or so when we see further numbers coming out from the manufacturing sector as well as sales. So right now, as we've mentioned, there is a distribution phase happening in the market, and I'm going to actually have a conversation with Scott O'Neill, who we had late in December, who talked about, or in December, I don't think it was late December, I think it was early December, actually, who from MarketSmith. There's a new product coming out there. I mentioned how you can get the two-week trial of that last week, but I want to tell you that they were spot on over the last year or so with their sentiment about the markets in general, and I think that there may be a little bit of a change occurring, at least temporarily, when it comes to the dynamics and psychology, as well as the overall, I'll say, the technicals of the market right now. So we're going to have him on as a guest next week. And just got an email from Robert Reich, who is just severely booked, and he's not going to be available for a little while. So hopefully we'll endeavor to get him late in the year when he does become available. John Markman, also a great investor and a great writer, writes for Market Watch as well as has his own newsletters, will be on in a couple of weeks. And beyond that, you know, we're going to continue bringing back like a Terry Bedford. Hopefully we're going to have Peter Schiff on again not too long. So lots of things lined up for the future. So in the meantime, I want you to have a profitable week. I want you to be careful to watch sell stops. We had a question that came in about sell stops. I'm going to answer this week on DH Unplugged. And also, I want you to make sure that you don't get too either overburdened by the stress of what's going on. Watch the signs of the market. That's the best thing that you could do. And make sure the fundamentals of what you're investing in are strong. Okay? Well, that's going to wrap it up. Episode 203 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you have a profitable week. Any questions, please email me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye for now.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.